Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
We had a really, really great, tremendous first hour of the show, and I'm looking for the second hour of the show to be just as good. I'm Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock. There's been a lot for us to discuss, although we haven't really talked a lot about the NBA because, you know, Chicago. We haven't talked a lot about what's going on inside the NBA bubble. I wanted to bring Josiah Johnson on because one day I'm sitting here just flipping around. This may have been when sports was just starting to try to come back. And I will, to me, White Men Can't Jump is a Shawshank movie. Wherever I see it, whatever channel it's on, I will pick it up from there and watch it until the end, even though I've seen it 100 times. And his father is just, I think, the best part of that entire movie. And then he had tweeted something about it, and I just started dying laughing. I was like, we got to get this guy on. So Herbie did the work, and we got him. He is a creative, and you should check him out. King Josiah 54 is where you can find him on Twitter. He does all sorts of videos, does memes, all sorts of stuff, and he joins me now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from out in Melrose Park, or you could just go to alpamonteford.com. Josiah, thanks so much for being on my show. I appreciate it.
Oh, man, thank you for having me. I appreciate joining you. Thank you for that glorious intro.
All right, so listen, I got a couple questions about your dad. I don't want to be disrespectful because you've made your own name, but I do have a couple questions about a couple things that you posted. How freaked out were you when you saw The Last Dance and saw that MJ had a poster of your dad?
Honestly, we knew about the poster because I think that was in Sports Illustrated a long, long, long time ago. So I don't know if you remember, but like right before The Last Dance dropped, there was the leak and all the episodes leaked, and I promised myself that I wasn't going to watch any of them out of respect for all the, you know, the producers, everybody involved in the show. But then I got a tip from one of my buddies, like, yo, make sure you check out this episode. MJ drops your pop's name. So we had never seen that video before. So when he saw it, obviously he was super excited and pumped, and I'm big and social, so I was kind of in my head just strategizing and planning, like, yo, it's going to be a big moment when this drops for you, because my pops is a Hall of Fame finalist. He hasn't gotten in yet, so really just trying to help build his name and really help people understand, you know, that only know him from the acting and that type of stuff, you know, that he was a hooper, and he was literally MJ, one of MJ's favorite players growing up. So we always knew that Mike loved my pops, and, you know, we would go down to his camp in Santa Barbara in the summertime and hang out. And it was weird for me, you know, seeing the way MJ looked at my dad, because most of the time that I saw my dad's career, he was washed by the time I was old enough to really, you know, really appreciate it. So, and I'm just being real. He knows. Like, he had a neck injury. He was trying to come back, and I'm just a little kid, so I know. It's like, you know, I hear you, this great player, but I don't really see it. So to see MJ kind of validate that and have it be obviously The Last Dance, which was one of the biggest docs of all time, I think, for the whole family, we were super excited about it.
What was more fun for him? Was it being in White Men Can't Jump or being in Blue Chips?
I think probably White Man Can't Jump. I mean, that White Man Can't Jump thing, it was really, really, really wild. Like, I used to help my dad run lines and practice and do stuff as a kid. And I remember when he was reading for that part and he ended up getting it. And he literally looked like the character Raymond for like a good 6 months. Like, he didn't shave. He's a method actor. So he really got into character. So I was seeing Raymond walking around the house, you know, all the time. And he was just literally, you know, he's super, a lot of people don't know, he was a theater arts major in college. So he's super like dedicated and focused to his craft. So he took that role serious. And for me as a kid to be in the theater, I remember we were at the premiere and seeing that scene for the first time and how the whole, you know, theater just went crazy. It was like, yeah, this might be iconic.
It is. I mean, like, every time, like, that scene is, like, there's a lot to take from that movie. Like, it's one of my favorites, no doubt. But the scene with Raymond is, like, the best because it's just, here, I'll just let the secret out of the bag. All of us know somebody like Raymond. All of us that have played with or against someone like Raymond at some point. So it was very relatable for anyone from a certain neighborhood, let's say, to see that character on the big screen.
Oh, yeah, most of that. You know, I mean, look, you know, I hoop, my whole family hoop, we've grown up with people like this. So for us, this is, you know, hearing these type of stories. And it was actually based on a real character. So hearing these type of stories is nothing new, but to see him kind of take that character now, even still, it's almost to his detriment, because now only thing everybody knows him for now is from Raymond as White Man Can't Jump. They don't know he was a 5-time All-Star, College Player of the Year, all that good stuff. It's just like, all right, yeah, man, you gonna go to your car, get your other gun. That's all that anybody ever says to him.
When you're the son of a star, do you feel obligated to follow their, like, did you love basketball, like playing it? Or were you like, man, I'm bigger than my dad. Like, I have some skills. Let me go try this. Or did you really genuinely have a love for it?
If your last name is Johnson growing up in Los Angeles, you will be playing basketball. I don't know, you know, that's just kind of, you know, from birth. Like, I remember literally I was 3 years old. He was coming down. Yeah, 3 years old. He was coming back from the All-Star game in Dallas. I want to say it was like 1986. And we pick him up from the airport. He's got this little mini hoop for me. And literally came this little Nerf, like little janky Nerf ball that I literally played with for like 2 years straight. So for us, it's just like you're in that world. You're immersed in the culture. And growing up out here, everybody, if your last name is Johnson, you're a hooper.
King Josiah 54 on Instagram and Twitter. I promise you, you will not be disappointed if you follow Josiah Johnson on Twitter. Before I get to the NBA stuff, you played 4 years at UCLA. You were a college athlete. How do you look at what's happening right now, specifically with college football and these kids like trying to fight to have their voices heard?
I mean, so here's the thing. Obviously, my dad played in the NBA, so I was taken care of. So for me, you know, it wasn't really an issue financially, but I've played with so many guys and know so many guys. And I've always been a big proponent of just how the NCAA operates and this whole notion that, it's, you know, it's about a free education and all that stuff. So for me to see the way that these guys are responding now, I've kind of lived for this moment. It's hard to ask an 18 to 22-year-old kid to kind of shoulder this burden and step to the plate. But, you know, I think in the wake of this pandemic and everything going on, and it seems like, you know, our priorities really aren't aligned with in terms of flattening the curve versus getting back the economics and making money and getting everything back. And everybody wants sports back. And I was like, that's great. If you wanted sports back, you should have been wearing a mask, you know, back in March when, you know, all the scientists and experts told you to. So to see these guys now kind of be thrust in this situation where they're on campus and you're seeing, you know, guys at SC and guys at all these different spots, you know, testing positive for COVID, it's like, who wants to be in that situation? And for me, being a UCLA alumni, to see the way that that crew stepped up initially and was just like, look, you know, we want to make sure that our priorities are taken care of and you guys are doing everything in our best interest. We want medical professionals. We want proper testing. All that type of things. I don't think that's ludicrous for them to ask, and especially the way the NCAA is constructed, that these guys really aren't allowed to have agents or aren't allowed to have people advising them. I think for me to see them step up like this was an amazing thing.
When you heard about the idea of the NBA bubble, were you optimistic that it could work?
This is my thing. When you take 22 people, you take the best 22 teams in the NBA, the best that the NBA has to offer, and you send them to Florida, I don't think at any point hearing that idea is good, especially – you know, Florida in general obviously is a meme, and just everybody knows all the crazy stuff that goes on there. Like, the numbers weren't looking well. It wasn't anything with a lack of faith in the NBA. It was just more a lack of faith in our country that I thought it would be able to sustain. And there was kind of some it wasn't really clear in terms of the Disney cast members and who would actually be in the bubble, who wouldn't be in the bubble. And then even early on, we saw like Rashawn Holmes, you know, dip out of the bubble, go get some chicken wings. So it was like, wait, is it a bubble? Is it just like an imaginary line? Like, what's going on? But for them to have, you know, successive weeks of, you know, zero positive tests, I think it's a testament to everybody in the league and, you know, just how professional, how on top of things they are. But also the NBA, too, is less amount of players compared to like an NFL or an MLB. So they had a lot, you know, they had a lot less to deal with. But to see the way that these other leagues are kind of handling the pandemic and the situation versus the NBA, you got to really just tip your hat to Adam Silver and their whole crew. I mean, they've literally, the viewing experience is amazing. You know, I think there was a lot of concern about guys taking 4 months off and then trying to come back in. And would the basketball look nasty? Would there be like high injury and all that type of stuff? But games have looked really good, been competitive. Obviously, I'm a Lakers and LeBron fan, so we'd love to see a little bit more on that side. But all across the board, like the bubbles to me has been awesome. So I just really got to give the NBA, you know, their love and credit for it.
I thought I was going to miss the fan participation aspect of it, but the games have been shot so well. Like they've staged it. They've almost staged it like it's a television show. I really haven't missed the fan aspect of it at all. How about you?
I think the production value for me has been amazing. Obviously, I work in production, so just looking at it, the viewing experience for fans, I think, is incredible. But I also think as fans, we're now watching it from our experience, and I know it's not like that from the players' perspective. For the players, it's got to feel a lot more like, you know, people have compared it to summer league, but almost compared to summer ball, like playing, you know, pickup games at UCLA and stuff like that. And that's why you're seeing, you know, guys like TJ Warren, guys like Dame, guys just going off and going crazy. Because it's a lot easier to get buckets kind of in that environment where you don't got 20,000 people and the stress and pressure. It's like a weird thing mentally as a hooper when you're in a gym full of 20,000 people. You think everybody's staring at you, even though that game's on, you know, to millions of households. It doesn't feel the same. There's a disconnect. You're working in a vacuum and, you know, in a bubble. So to see the way that, you know, these guys are rallied and just, you know, the level that they're playing at and the viewing experience for me as a fan has been awesome. I'm curious to know what it's like for them because you see these boards with these screens and all these fans, but it's not like they can look at those fans and make eye contact. I mean, they can see their family, but their family can't see them except for the game angle. So I'm just curious what their experience is like.
Josiah, are we asking for trouble when we get to the wives and girlfriends portion of this thing?
That's when I thought this thing was really going to get serious. I mean, you know, when you've got these guys all on the campus together, obviously there's room for issues. You know, a lot of guys got beef, Pat Bev and Westbrook, now Dame and PG and Westbrook, that whole crew, all in the same hotels and all kind of frolicking around in the same spaces. I thought there would be some issues there, but it seems like guys have been great. But now you introduce this whole, you know, new element with the wives and girlfriends, and hats off to the NBA for kind of trying to shut down the Instagram thing and kind of the, you know, the potential conflicts and issues that may arise by doing that. I'm still curious to see how it pans out. And it feels like now the honeymoon phase is really going to be over once you get these families in there. And I'm also wondering how they're going to handle with rooms and all that type of stuff, because I've been looking at some of the rooms and, you know, look, the hotels at Disney World are great, but those, you know, for a 7-footer sitting in a standard room, and now you've got family and, you know, all those type of people there. I'm just curious to see how that pans out and how that breaks down, because I feel like we're really going to see what these guys are made of once the families hit the bubble.
I can't figure out how to classify Dame. I want to say hero, but I also want to say like anti-hero. Like I love the fact that he's like, you can talk all you want, but I will send you home and have sent you home in the past. So where, what do we do with Dame? Is he our leader, or is he a great like movie or comic book villain, or is he the hero?
I mean, personally, I feel like to me, Dame is the hero. Just the way he plays, the stuff he brings, the stuff he does off the court with his music, and just showing that there's different sides of hoopers. Like you can have the Mamba mentality on the court, but you know, life is so much more than just basketball. So if you're interested in the arts or entertainment, anything like that, really pursue those avenues as well. And to see, I mean, this is the thing. Like, I'm looking at the way the Clippers, you know, my pops played for the Clippers. I was a lifelong Clippers fan until LeBron came to the Lakers. LeBron to me trumps everything. So I've seen that kind of mentality, and it's hard, you know, for those guys. They're all bickering, and none of them really want anything other than Kawhi. So I don't really get why, you know, Pat Bev or PG would feel inclined to come at them like that. Like, why do you want to poke the bear? And as a Laker fan, you know, it's definitely disappointing because now if the Blazers end up getting that eighth seed or end up making the, you know, the playoffs, we got to deal with it. So, I mean, I'm curious to see how it pans out. But for me, Dame is definitely a hero. And to see the stuff he's doing on the court and the fearlessness he plays with, you know, backs against the wall, these guys are scratching and clawing, trying to get a playoff spot. And he's, what, I think averaging like 56, 57 in the last two games, just, you know, going hammer time right now in the bubble. So it's exciting to watch. I think it's great to watch in the regular season. Now, once the playoffs hit, I expect LeBron and the Lakers to shut that down and put an end to it. But we're definitely going to see what happens.
A couple days ago, you have Luka as your bubble MVP, right?
I had look, TJ Warren's got to get it right now just from what he's been doing, but I'm still rocking, you know, I'm Lakers all day, every day. I know LeBron and AD really haven't put it out, but I feel like they're doing that old school Muhammad Ali rope-a-dope, really not playing their hand, just kind of letting these teams think that, you know, that they're not what they are. But I think across the board, I'm just excited and happy with the elevated level of play. Like, the teams are playing hard. Everybody's out there appears to be having a good time and having fun, and also still being able to get the, you know, the social messaging and all that stuff going on, because I know how important that was to everybody. So to see all those things being able to take place, and look, we're watching basketball in August. It's incredible. Like, you know, normally this would be, you know, like summer leagues would just be wrapping up, and, you know, you might be at the Drew. I'm definitely going to miss the summer hoop scene. I'm curious to see what happens now in the future with the league panning out, but to get high-level NBA basketball, to be able to watch LeBron in August and all the way through October, hopefully. I mean, there's been a lot of negative stuff in this pandemic. This has been one of the few bright spots, so.
If you want to follow Josiah, you should. You really should. KingJosiah54 on Twitter and Instagram. You're a creative. And looking at all of your stuff, I wonder, so what do you want to do with it? Because it's really high quality.
So, I mean, this is the thing. I work, and it's funny, a lot of people just see the social stuff, and they think that's kind of like, you know, with the media. So I do a lot of stuff on the social side, host a show with Yahoo Sports, but I also do a lot of stuff on the writing side. Just wrapped up writing and producing a show with Ava DuVernay and Michael Starberry and Colin Kaepernick for Netflix, which will be a scripted series that will be coming out hopefully, you know, once they'll be able to start shooting very soon once this pandemic kind of gets sorted out. So I live in both worlds. I make a lot of money on the entertainment side, writing and stuff. And I tell people, like, you know, the Twitter and all that stuff is kind of like my pickup game. It's where I stay fresh. It's where I stay topical, stay relevant. I'm a little bit on the older side, so I'm trying to just, you know, I'm kind of a dinosaur, so I'm still just trying to stay in the game before these young kids push me out the paint. And really just trying to appreciate, bring humor. And I'm a big basketball fan, but I hate, you know, the analytics and the number crunch. And I really think it just takes away from people's ability to watch and appreciate what these guys are doing when you relegate them to just statistics and stuff. So I just try to bring a different perspective into it, man. Bring some comedy, lighten the mood, let people just know, you know, same way when I was hooping, we'd be in the locker room or whatever, joking around. Obviously, you take everything serious and you're going out there, you're going to battle, but you also have to take a step back and realize it's just a game. Like, there's tons of other stuff going on in the world. So take these 2 to 3 hours to watch this game and have a good time with it.
How exciting is it for you to be a part of the Kaepernick project?
I mean, look, I've been a big supporter of Cap, you know, since back when this all first started. So to be able to work with him, be able to work with Ava, who is honestly one of the, there's no words I can describe just how thankful I am to be able to have the opportunity to just be underneath her and learn from her and just kind of see how she moves in this game and how successful she's been. And then me and Michael Starberry, who's he was one of the creators of Legend of Chamberlain Heights with me, to see his ascension. He's, you know, my mentor, one of the most talented writers that I've ever seen. So just to be in a room with these people and to be in a room with Colin and just kind of hear him talk, because, you know, there's a lot of misinformation that was going on during this whole process. Like, oh, he's doing this. He doesn't want to play. He doesn't want to do this. He doesn't want to do that. So it was great just to be able to sit in a room with him and ask him these questions and straight up to see his face, you know, to his response to these things and know how much that he loves football. And I think this show is really going to be able to offer a glimpse into that and really help people understand how much he really loved the game and how much he put into it and how much he's been an underdog his whole life. So even now in these moments, you know, in the face of adversity, he's used to this. So just to have the opportunity to be able to work with all of those people, you know, honestly, it's an experience I wouldn't trade my life for.
When things get closer, will you come back on the show? Because I'd love to dig into this more with you.
Hey, most definitely. Obviously, you know, there's only so much I can say right now. I'm not trying to
get a
call from Aver from Netflix kind of stomping down on me like, you're talking too much. You're making a block too high, talking spicy. But, yeah, as we get closer to release, man, I'd love to come on, man. I got nothing but love for the Shy. So, you know, one of my roommate and teammate at UCLA, TJ Cummings, who grew up out there. His pops is Terry Cummings. I just went through DePaul and that whole thing. So nothing but love for the city, man. I love to come on and help y'all.
Well, thank you. Yeah, he went to my high school. So, I mean, that's and I went to DePaul. So everything is connected, Josiah. So I appreciate you, man. Congratulations and continued success. And thanks for giving me a few minutes to hang out.
Oh, man, thank you so much for having me, man. I appreciate it.
That's Josiah Johnson. go follow him on social. Next time I have him back on, I'll ask him about Legends, because I actually really enjoy Legends of Chamberlain Heights. And I'm like, there should be more of that show, because it's fun and funny. But that was fun, man. That's a great find and a good book right there by the best in the business, Herb Lawrence. We're going to take a break. We haven't talked about the Cubs, and we should. Why? Because they've won 12 out of the first 15 games they played. I would like to spend some time talking about how good Kyle Hendricks was yesterday. We'll do that next here on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Bryant, it's a high fly ball deep left field. This ball is back toward the wall. It's got a chance. Gone. The wrist is fine, thank you. And the Cubs lead 5-1.
Chris Bryant made a great play in the outfield, and it looked like he jammed up his wrist. And then the next inning, he comes back and he hits a home run. We'll see if he is in the lineup tonight. 6:15 first pitch, which means 5:15 pregame for you on The Score. Don't get confused, because I got confused today when I was like, why is this not showing up on Marquee? It's a Fox National game tonight, so you'll be watching on Fox. Can I just say, like, I've given it a couple of chances now. I can't mess with the superimposed fans. It messes me up. Like, when I don't – so, all right, let me break it down a little bit further. I don't mind it if the shot is isolated. If it's just, hey, we're going to do a crowd shot and we're going to show you this crowd shot of people that we're superimposing. That doesn't bother me that much. It does bother me, though, when, like, a guy is going back for a ball at the track, or a guy is going near the stands to make a play. It's completely distracting. And then there was the one time that they had the Cubs on where you had the player, the superimposed fans, and then they pan up to the fans that are on the rooftops, and I was completely thrown off. Everything else of the broadcast I like a lot. I can't mess with the superimposed fans. I just can't. It's not for me. Let's talk a little bit about this Cubs team. Yesterday, they took care of business, and Stoney had brought it up earlier, the idea that the Cubs were the beneficiary of Cleveland acting stupidly. Not all of Cleveland. Let's call out the names. Zach Plesac and Mike Clevenger. The Cubs ended up being the beneficiary of that, but they took advantage of it. They took advantage of those teams, that team not being ready to go. And they went in there and they did what they had to do. This Cubs team is good, man. What's really trippy is, if you look at who they are offensively right now, you still haven't seen, even though you got home runs from Brian and Tony Two Chains yesterday, those guys haven't really started to hit yet. Bryant, Rizzo, Baez haven't really started to hit. Herbie, am I right, or isn't Jason Hayward leading the team in RBIs now?
I gotta check that, but the man's been hot as of late, been killing.
I think
it.
He's leading them in RBIs, and he definitely did in over the last 3 days. But he's been driving in runs, and he's been lifting the ball. He gets good exit velocity, but now that he's actually putting some air underneath the ball.
Yeah, you're correct. 11 RBI for Hayward, 9 for Baez, the next closest one.
See? So that's good. But let's talk about the pitching. Let's talk about Kyle Hendricks. Man, that guy last night was so good that he was laughing at himself. I threw it up on Twitter. There was a changeup that he threw to Victor Caratini because Willie got thrown out of the game for arguing and breaking his bat. He threw a changeup. It was so disgusting, and I mean that in a good way. Caratini, with his mitt, is a little active. It takes him a while to settle his target. He settles the target, It's low and outside. And Hendricks puts it, like, exactly there. Like, there wasn't a lot of movement that had to happen to the mitt. So far, like, that guy hasn't missed spots. He's been on it. And so much fun to watch. Another quality start for the Cubs starters. So they've played 15 games, and I believe that's 11 quality starts that they've gotten. When you pitch like that, you're going to have opportunities to win a whole bunch of games. And Cleveland is a good team, although they didn't have Clevinger, which is because of him, that they didn't have him. I mean, this is exactly the type of start that you wanted to see them get off to, isn't it? When people talk about the idea of the fast start for the Cubs, that you're hoping that they can get a fast start, and then all of those old things like kick into gear, that muscle memory of being a championship-level team 4 out of the last 5 years. Like, does that kick in, and do you find yourself in a place? But if you look at where they're at right now, the Cubs have a 5.5-game lead in the division. They've played 15 games. Milwaukee's having issues. They got bludgeoned yesterday. We all know what's happening with St. Louis. And if you didn't know, maybe you don't know this, so I'll reiterate. The White Sox and the Cardinals were supposed to play the Field of Dreams. They were like, we're going to cancel that a couple weeks ago. Then the series was to move here to Chicago. The Cardinals are supposed to play the White Sox tomorrow. That game has been postponed because there is another positive COVID test for the Cardinals. It seems difficult for me to understand how, if another positive popped up today, how in the world they would play on Saturday. So I would be shocked. If it's safe, I'm happy that the White Sox get to play, but I'd be shocked if they played the Cardinals this weekend. And I'm not sure what you do now overall if you're Major League Baseball. Other than this, I do have this suggestion for Major League Baseball. Because if you look at the standings, you may notice that right now in the National League East, the Miami Marlins are in first place. They've played a total of 12 games. Now, that's not as bad as the Cardinals, who've only played 5. But if you look in that division, you've got two teams that have played 20 games, with Miami only playing 12. A third of the season is what Atlanta and the Mets have done already. Washington and Philadelphia were impacted by the Marlins, so they have fewer games. I think that it's incumbent upon Major League Baseball, and I don't think they have to do it right now, but I do think in a couple of weeks, they need for there to be a threshold. If we're going on win percentages, fine, but you can't hand over a division to a team that has a 75% win percentage and they've only played 10 games. I guess that would be impossible. 15 games? I'm not good at math. You understand my point. You can't have the Cardinals play 40 games and then win the division if the Cubs play 55 games. I think that the threshold, me and Kat Garcia, shout out to the baseball girl. She was on House of L, and we were talking about her having a World Series ring. You should go check out that episode on House of L. I was saying that initially I was like 50 should be the threshold, but I'm willing to move that back to 48. That's as far as I can go. I think that at some point soon, not tomorrow, Major League Baseball has to say the teams that make the playoffs have to have a minimum threshold of 48 games. We're already in this new place where things seem really, really difficult. You can't let these guys end up in the playoffs having played 20 games or 25 or even 30 games. To me, the number's 48, and that's – I know we're not playing let's make a deal, Wayne Brady, but that's as low as I'm willing to go on this. But right now, the Cubs, 12-3. They've won 8 out of their last 9 games. They are getting phenomenal starting pitching. Their run differential. They're the only team in the National League Central with a plus run differential. And their differential is plus 18. The rest of the teams in the division, Cincinnati, minus 10. I still have a little bit of faith that they could make things difficult. I mean, they don't have to do much. All they have to do is finish second, and they'll get into the playoffs. Have you been watching what Castellanos is doing? Fam. Nicky two times has had a good start to the season. So they're a minus 10. Milwaukee's minus 13. I don't even know if we should even count the Cardinals minus 1 because they've only played 5 games. And Pittsburgh is minus 30. Oof. Are they bad? But the Cubs are good. Cubs are real good. I know that people are saying that the Cardinals should just forfeit games. I don't think that that's the answer. Because now you're just giving wins away. Like, that's – I get that people – a lot of this is punitive. A lot of people see the Cardinals, see their rivals, see a team that they're going to blame for messing up everything for everyone else and saying that there should be punishment that is levied. In theory, I agree with you, but in practice, you can't do it. If you're going to hand out these wins to people, if you're going to say these are wins for the other team, then that's an unfair competitive balance too. The answers to this problem isn't easy. I do wonder, though, at some point, if they can't play, Do they have to do what team was it? Was it Orlando in the MLS? They're like, we're out. Like, we're just out. Like, we can't get this under control. And we're out. This text says, then allow win percentage to dictate playoffs. No. Because that means a team like the Cardinals could play 12 games and have a higher win percentage and go to the playoffs. Like I said, there's no easy solutions here.
I think, Lawrence, at minimum, already 60 is a farce of a season. At minimum, a team has to play 50 games to get in the playoffs. That's what I would say. Like, these 60 games, it's a weird thing. But 50 is bottom line. And if the Cardinals have to play a bunch of games where they have to travel to different places, like if this week was free – and they had a Friday game, a Saturday game, and a Sunday game versus the Sox. And the Cubs are also in town. I think we brought it up. The doubleheader on Saturday. Traveling to Wrigley on early Saturday and then playing that night game versus the White Sox. They have to make the games up and have to hit the 50. It's not up to other people, other teams to do it.
Yeah, and I the only thing that I don't like about the playing of catch-up, and in the Cardinals' case, it's going to be impossible because now you're talking about 55 games in 44 days, I think, if they don't play this weekend, something like that. I don't like the doubleheaders for the other teams because I feel that that affects competitive balance too.
How about a doubleheader per series? That's it, the maximum.
I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. I think that that's all right. I don't want to see like, oh, we got to make up these games. So this 3-game scheduled series is now 5 games where we play a doubleheader on Friday and Sunday and a single game on Saturday. Like, I don't want any of that stuff. But a doubleheader per series, I think, is all right. I think that I would take that under advisement. And we're not far apart. Like, to me, it's 48. To you, it's 50. And 50 is where – I was like, maybe 48, because then you start looking at, like, the Cubs have got a lot of games that they've got to make up. They've got to figure out how to make up games with the Cardinals, and God forbid there be any other team that's going through this. Then what do you do? Like, God forbid that Cleveland, that we find out that something's gone wrong with Cleveland, and then what happened? So, I don't know, man. Like, it's – I don't know what you do. Like, do you cut the season off at 30, just play a tournament and crown a World Series champion? I don't know. But I do know that I brought this up on the show a few days ago, and it's starting to get – I'm starting to hear it a louder drumbeat to this. MLB is already starting to look at a bubble for the playoffs. They're looking to do what the NHL did to try and make sure that their playoffs get played. And that has its own set of problems. Because are you saying that the bubble that you have is in one park or two? For each league, are both of those parks inside? Because we haven't really experienced rain being a big factor, except for, where was it where they couldn't get the tarp? Was that Washington when they couldn't get the tarp on the field? You know who they should have called for that, Herbie?
Who?
Roger Bozart.
Ugh, God. I mean, we were lamenting that guy before that mess up, and now he's just terrible. A-Rod's horrible. But I would say for the bubble, what better city than Milwaukee? Boring. It's got a dome. Where are you going? You stay in the Pfister Hotel, visit the ghost.
Could you do Milwaukee, Chicago?
Too exciting. Like,
could you make that a bubble and have both ballparks in play? And so you have Cubs, you have White Sox, and you have Milwaukee.
But then you
all within 90 miles of each other.
But then you include inclement weather into the mix. It'll be tough.
Okay.
I mean, so, I would so love you're for saying, Miami to have it because it's perfect, but also in Florida, so terrible.
Very terrible.
But the NBA bubble's there, so maybe you can say, hey, they've found a way in Florida to seal it off and make it safe.
Our friend Hannah Kaiser, who's been on the show before, she was talking about this, and I think that she's spot on. I really wish that baseball would have tried to take advantage of day baseball. And I get that they wanted to up the numbers by having games at night. And I brought this up with the Cubs, where I was like, oh, of course the Cubs are going to play day games. And they didn't. They're like, no, we're putting our whole schedule at night, fam. Y'all going to be at home watching these games. And people have. But I kind of wish that they could have taken from the NHL and NBA the idea of having games on all day. Like, that could have been a lot of fun. All right, we need to take a break. The Milwaukee people are coming after Herbie. Not surprised by that. Back after this on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
I have the Cubs lineup. Chris Bryant is in the lineup. He will lead off and play left field. Anthony Rizzo will bat second and play first. Javier Baez will bat third and play shortstop. Wilson Contreras will DH tonight. Ian Happ will play center field. David Bodie at third base. Steven Souza Jr. in right field. Nico Horner to play second base. And Victor Caratini will be behind the plate. Yu Darvish will pitch. I'm looking forward to watching Darvish pitch because he's just fun. He's just fun. And Brett Anderson will go for the Brewers. Again, you can hear the game on The Score. Pregame starting at 5:15. You can watch the game on Fox tonight. So the game, it will be televised on Fox. Before I get out of here and make way for McNeil and Parkins, who, by the way, I just got the text message. Oh, they're going to have Savvy on at 3:40. I love Savvy. He's so fun. J.P. Morosi is going to be on with him at 3 o'clock. Jeff Brom from Purdue, I'd like to, not that he needs it, but I'd like to give him a shout-out because what he did with his time, instead of bitching and moaning like Nebraska did, was he used it to come up with a proposal for how spring football would work. This is from my buddy Adam Rittenberg, who writes for ESPN. Brohm's proposal outlines an 8-game season beginning February 27th and finishing April 17th, with postseason play wrapping up by May 15th. He also outlined a slightly truncated fall schedule that would feature 10 games and begin October 2nd after a 4-week training camp. He really did the research. It's interesting, because there are a lot of people like, well, you can't ask him to play back-to-back seasons. He did the research and compared like different 18-month cycles of football, or 12-month cycles of football, and he found that it wouldn't be as prohibitive if people are making it out to be. So good for him with saying, all right, this sucks. We would prefer to play football in the fall, but since we're not, let's figure out a way to make spring work. This is exactly the way that it should be working right now, is that people should be thinking about solutions for spring football and be in a better place overall than where we're at right now. So shout out to Purdue and Jeff Brohm for that. The McNeil and Parkin Show is coming up. Big thanks to Steve Stone, Jason Goff, Josiah Johnson. We had a great show today, and that is because of my executive producer, Herb Lawrence. We'll be back for Friday's show. We'll get you ready. We'll talk about what, if anything, is going to go on between the Cardinals and the White Sox, and we'll break down Cubs and Brewers for you. Have a great rest of your day. I'll talk to you at noon. Go check out my latest House of L podcast. It's a Bears preview. It's super good. Later.
Bye-bye. Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.